The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing. Not because they are easy, but
we
because
have main
they are
engine hard. Start. 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston, broadcasting to 7 continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good afternoon, listeners, and welcome to the Sunday Weird Space Show. Weird, as I will explain in a few minutes. Hey, I hope all of you had a really terrific Thanksgiving holiday weekend. Those of you that celebrate Thanksgiving, I know many of you listen to the show outside the United States. And that may be our guest calling right now. You want to hold on, please? I'm back, and I was telling everybody, I hope you had a great Thanksgiving holiday, and those of you outside the U.S. or who don't celebrate Thanksgiving, I still hope you had a terrific long weekend and kept it safe, and everybody's getting ready to go into the end of the year season. You can call our show. We are going to do open lines. I'll explain in a minute. 1-866-687-7223. Email drspace@thespaceshow.com. The others are working too, but I'll just give that one out to save time since we're so late. And then remember, we're podcasting. You can find the RSS URL on our website, both of our newsletters. We're iTunes compatible, a host of other places. Copyrighted trademark show. Do not tamper with the shows, edit them, do anything commercial with them. Hey, and what do you think of big sis in our government seizing websites? Maybe you want to talk about that. I don't think it really pertains to space, but apparently a bunch of domains are being seized for what are considered to be illegal downloads of music and films and copyrighted materials and stuff like that. Well, you know, the Space Show's copyrighted, and, you know, it's up on a lot of different sites that I don't even know about. And I'm just wondering if Big Sis and the government will think that those sites are illegal use of copyrighted material. So I don't know the answer to that. Gigadial links back to us, and astrospacenow.com, Podcast Alley, iTunes, all link back to us. They do not host any of our content. But I do know that there are websites out there that have taken it upon themselves to host our content and to never tell me about it. So I don't know who you are. So I don't really know if those are targeted domains by Homeland Security and our Justice Department or not. But the Space Show is copyrighted, so that might be interesting to see if we go to one of these sites someday and it says, hey, we've been taken over by Homeland Security, and you can't access your Space Show content on whatever that site is. But you can always access it at thespaceshow.com, our blog, thespaceshow.wordpress.com, and Astrospace Now, Podcast Alley, iTunes, and a host of other places that do it with our permission. Well, our guest today, I'm going to skip a lot of stuff because we are so We're so late, and that's because our guest, Chris McKay, is a no-show. So we confirmed Chris as late as yesterday. The only number I have for him is his NASA Ames office number. I've left him many messages, a couple of emails, so if he's able to call us in, we'll get the show underway. And if he is unable to do it for whatever reason happened today, Chris, a great guy, very cordial. Something must have happened. He has been on the show many, many times. I consider him a friend. We'll just reschedule him. It's not the end of the world. And since we're not headed to Mars anyway, does it matter if we talk to him about going to Mars today or within the next 50 years? I don't know. Maybe that's an open lines topic for today. But again, we do have open lines for next week on Sunday. a week from today. So I don't want to steal the thunder of that open line show. Okay, well, I've kind of introduced enough. The only other thing I really want to say is to remind everybody that we are partially supported and sponsored by the Secure World Foundation, which is just an absolutely fabulous organization. They've got some new position papers out on space situational awareness, as well as debris mitigation. They're doing unbelievable work in that area, so check them out. And Brian Whedon will be back on the show in a couple of weeks, and he's got some new updates for us on some of the work that he's been doing with them, as well as what the Secure World Foundation does. Their website, of course, secureworldfoundation.org. Well, listen to this. We already got a caller on hold. Also, for many of you who have just started listening to the show again and you've been playing hooky for whatever reason, remember, we don't do chat anymore. The reason we don't is because many of you used it as a chat room. And me, being the nice guy who has absolutely zero boundaries in life, capitulated, and it was very distracting to the guest. It was very distracting to me. I got lots and lots of complaints about it. So since it's not possible to reform the listeners who want to use it as chat but don't want to use a chat room, given the fact that we have tried three times in the past to start a chat room up and nobody ever did it, I killed the chat. So the best way to reach us is on the toll-free line. This is a talk show. That means you talk. You don't type. Talking is easy to do on 1-866-687-7223. For those of you outside the United States, it's an MCI toll-free number, and you should be able to find your MCI in-country operator and tell that person to connect you to this toll-free number. And I know some countries don't allow toll-free numbers, but if your country does, you should be able to get through to us. And, of course, we will still take email, but please write in decent language so that I don't have to interpret. And you should be tight-worded and succinct. And that email address to save time, drspace@thespaceshow.com. We already have a caller on hold waiting for us for open lines, and you are, please.
Tim from Huntsville.
Welcome. What's up on this strange open line show that was supposed to be with Dr. Chris McKay today?
Oh, I sent you an email link. It's to a story about a Spanish woman who just claimed ownership of the sun.
Yeah, I read that over the weekend in the news too. And you know, the world's full of Looney Tunes. What can I tell you?
Yeah.
She won't get very far. There are actually dozens of registries that people have been using, and they have claimed every celestial body and every item known to humankind since the beginning of mythology under every name possible, including the sun. So she's hardly the first to pull this one off. But, you know, if it's better than taking Prozac, it's probably better than taking Prozac. What can I tell you?
But here's the thing, though. These sort of actions actually hurt the development of space to a certain extent, because if you're dealing with all these, you know, wackos out there, what happens when you have people actually going to space and, you know, building colonies 100 or 200 years from now?
Well, they're still not going to be owning the sun. Okay, so for listeners, if you haven't followed what Tim is talking about, there's this 49-year-old woman, Angeles Duran, who lives someplace in Spain, and in the online edition of her daily El Mundo and some other newspapers, she claimed that the international agreements block countries and nations from owning celestial bodies, but not individuals. And nobody has ever claimed the sun, but they have claimed a lot of other things. So she claims the sun and is going to lease it to everybody for some pretty high fees, and then she allocates what percentage of her lease revenue is going to go to charity and is going to go to this cause and that cause. Yeah, it should all go to her mental health and the mental health of whatever pig attorney is actually helping her do this stupid thing. Does it distract? I don't know. You know, our friend Greg Nimitz attempted to sue NASA, because he claimed ownership of an asteroid, and this was the asteroid that NASA landed on several years ago. Do you recall this? So he his standing was and he said he notified the State Department, which he probably did, and got no response from him because I'm sure they'd blow him off, and NASA, and so if a certain amount of time goes by without an official response, it's sort of like de facto you've been accepted or something like that. So he claimed that he did own the rights to the asteroid, and so he charged NASA parking fees. Well, he was thrown out of court. Yeah, I mean, you know, it never got any place. And there were various reasons why it was thrown out of court. And the people who try to sell you interest on the moon and Mars and other things, whenever they have been taken to court, they don't do very well. So does it detract? I don't think it probably does, because there are loonies doing things all the time. Look, do quacks who tell you that apricot nectar is going to cure cancer stop you from getting legitimate medical treatment if you have cancer? Steve McQueen, remember, when he was alive, went down to Tijuana, Mexico, and Ensenada, Mexico, to get some Looney Tunes cancer treatment to try to avoid the Grim Reaper. I don't think it has any overall effect, and I just see it as entertainment and something, you know, to help you laugh through another riot-wise miserable set of news stories like North Korea and stuff. But I don't know, maybe other people really do think it matters. Here's where it would matter: if some stupid Spanish court actually gave her some kind of jurisdiction or ownership, you know, some little local, you know, magistrate that has standing in Spain actually said she could own, you know, the sun and lease it.
Oh, my gosh. If she does that, I'm going to find a whole bunch of people with skin cancer. We're all going to sue her.
Well, that's a good idea. But, you know, who knows what some small town, you know, magistrate might do. And I'm totally unfamiliar with the Spanish legal system. I imagine they have something equivalent to the Supreme Court. And I would imagine that treaty law is the highest law of their land, too, like it is in the United States. And I would suspect that anything that got through a lower court of this, you know, lunacy would probably be, you know, thrown out. But yeah, I guess if you own it, then you got all the liability, right?
So, pretty much, yeah.
So skin cancer lawsuits, here we come.
Yeah.
So we put a lien on her revenue that she's going to get from everybody from renting sunlight out to all of us.
Pretty much.
I'd like to know who's going to do the accounting for this.
Hey, she's the one who put herself in that position. She claimed the moon. So
it's interesting that there's no picture of her on any of the websites that I've seen, so I can't judge physically, you know, how much of a loon she is or not. She lives in the town of Salvaterra de Mino, so forgive me for those of you who speak Spanish, and I'm botching the name of your town. And it says that she wants to slap a fee on everyone who uses the sun and give half of the proceeds to the Spanish government. That tells you right there she's loony. And 20% of the nation's, and 20% to the nation's pension fund. So, I mean, she is certifiable. So that's 30%, let's see, 20%, that's 70% of the revenue she collects goes to the Spanish government and Spanish pension funds.
Yeah.
10% to research, 10% to ending world hunger. I wonder if she's running for Miss America there. And she's only going to keep 10% herself. Now, she's clearly into redistribution of income. Maybe she should contact the White House and talk to the president about how she can help redistribute her income into our system, because he's big on that stuff.
I guess what I was really worried about when you got stuff like this happening is that you do have certain groups out there that doesn't want any sort of commercialization of space at all. They don't want anyone claiming property or getting a profit from it. And they can always cite these loons out there, and they say, well, I'm claiming this heavenly, this celestial body. You know, if this person can claim, if you can claim like a parcel of land and you can extract resources from it, then this lady right here can own the sun.
Yeah, but look, again, there are, and I wish I could remember them. I'm registered on probably a dozen of them for owning every kind of body in the solar system, and I gave them unique names so that they couldn't be registered by anyone else, and so did everybody else who's doing it. So none of those registries, and they've been written about in space.com and the space blogs and things over the years, you know, if that never took legs and detracted from anyone or the environmental movements or the greenies or whatever group is opposed to space settlement, this lunatic is not going to show up on the horizon either. It's just a fun human interest kind of crazy whacked out story in my opinion. But hey, I could be wrong, you know, especially if some stupid court gives her the right to own the sun and she were actually to try to collect it. I'd like to know how she could even bother to assess it and charge rent, and who the hell would pay her.
Now, here's another thing. What if the court turns around and says, you can't claim it because it's a common heritage as a man, and nobody can do anything in space with it?
Well, I think I think that's the way it is now. You can't own a celestial body. You can't take title to it. So a nation can't. But see, to have private ownership of property, you have to have a deed, even in a country such as Spain. And that deed comes from the legal right of the state or the jurisdiction to issue a deed. So if the state has no legal standing to issue a deed to a celestial body, including the sun, they certainly can't issue a legal binding deed to an individual about a piece of property because they can't, there are no deeds to issue. So, I mean, if you carry it out, I don't see how this is anything other than an April Fool's Day story, you know, at the 1st of December. And I honestly, anybody who tries to get traction out of it is going to be joining the fool's circle along with this lady. I just don't see it going any place, and other than to have some good laughs.
So you don't think anybody on either side of that issue can seize on this and turn it to their advantage?
No, and again, I cite all of these registries that are out there for people to own, you name it. You know, I wish a friend of mine was listening from Romania, Virgil Pop, who's an amazing space lawyer. And, you know, he's not really, he doesn't listen all the time because of the time difference. But he's written books on Who Owns the Moon, for example. It's one of the best books I ever read, and he self-published it. And, you know, this has been going on for decades with people claiming ownership of the moon or the celestial bodies or selling a deed to Mars or, you know, whatever it is. And, you know, this is not having any standing with anybody for any reason to really support or object to a cause in space. So, no, I don't think this will go anywhere. I think it'll just, you know, ultimately die out. And I can't imagine that she would even get any standing in court, even in Spain, to somebody to hear her case. But that would be fun if she actually did. But no, I honestly don't think it will make any difference, because if it was going to make a difference, there's a lot of precedents out there that could have made a difference on this, because she's not the first one to be claiming stuff. I mean, look at all the people who have claimed ownership of Mars. My God, they should be able to claim violation of airspace, landing rights, you know, debris. You're messing up my planet with your garbage and your debris. Pay me damages for that. The same for Venus, the same for the moon. You know, nobody's ever, you know, had any legs to do anything like that. So just enjoy it.
All right.
And maybe if you go to Spain, you can meet her.
No, I don't want to. No, thanks.
Listeners, I'll put the link up to one of the stories. It's all over the internet, to this article, and you can go have some fun with it. That's what I say. I'd be much more concerned with the WikiLeaks than this stupid nutcase claiming ownership of the sun. although the WikiLeaks don't seem to have anything to do with space. What else have you got on your mind? Anything?
I had some questions for Chris McKay, but he's not on, so.
No, I guess I'll have to reschedule. He has my phone number to call directly into the show board, and it doesn't look like the show's gonna go down. And he has the email. Maybe he got the times wrong, although I don't really see how he could have done that. But we'll try to reschedule.
All right.
Okay. Have a good week, Tim. Thanks for the call.
Thanks.
Okay. Bye bye. So if anybody else wants to call us today and talk about anything that's on your mind, sorry for the distraction, toll-free number 1-866-687-7223. John sent me a note, and this is another John in Montana, and says the Spanish courts might go for it if the government gets a lot of money. You know, 100% of nothing is still 100%. So I don't know how they're going to get anything. But maybe a Californian should send in and claim something, and we can use the money to pay off California's debt. I'm sure the California legislatures would go for it. Again, for those of you who are just tuning in, we have been unable to locate our scheduled guest for today, Dr. Chris McKay at NASA Ames. We will attempt to reschedule Chris for the very near future. We're sorry about the confusion, and hopefully all is okay at his end. And look for the website newsletter, and I will make announcements as to when he can be rescheduled. I do know we have open lines next Sunday, which is December 5th, but we'll see if you all have something that you want to talk about. Maybe some of you want to talk about the problems Discovery is having. I think they've been moved to the middle of December now because they're still meeting to ascertain what's going on with all these cracks that they're finding. So maybe some of you want to talk about that. I really haven't been paying that much attention, but perhaps some of you can update us or have thoughts on what the lame ducks are planning to do about continuing resolution, not just for space, but for the nation as a large. Are they planning to actually pass a fiscal year 11 budget? Is there any more progress as to what that fiscal year 11 NASA budget will look like, or is it going to be deferred until the new Congress comes in later in January? And I guess the lame ducks come back for a short period before the Christmas vacation, and then they're out of here, right? Until the new Congress is sworn in. But I don't think they come back in January unless the president calls a special meeting of Congress. And who knows if that will happen? So if anybody can elaborate or clarify on the continuing resolution status or something like that, that I think that would be helpful. So please do call in. Again, the toll-free number is 866-687-7223. Good morning. You're on the Space Show. Who are you, please?
And I have turned the sound down.
You going to tell the Spanish woman to go for it?
I'm sorry, I'm missing that one.
Oh, she's claimed ownership of the sun.
Oh yeah, I wanted to touch on that issue.
Oh, you got to be kidding. Come
no,
on.
No. The ownership issue in a sane and rational way.
Is there a sane and rational way? Go for it.
Don't attempt ownership. Don't attempt to fight for the right to own something. Go the easy way. Simply sustain the right to take material from a heavenly body without owning it. This is established by lunar samples. So the smart thing to do is to do what NASA and the Russians have already done and have established the legal right to bring material back, and notice that there is no mention of what the material is used for. So it could be sold commercially or what have you.
Well, that isn't what the Spanish lady is doing.
Yeah, I know. There are a bunch of people that have a big bug up their butt about about ownership and mining rights and all that stuff. And I think rather than take on and create useless hassle, simply go smoothly with the way the law now is. And it does give you the right to bring material back for profit.
So what are you going to bring back from the sun for profit?
Well, nothing. Well, sunshine, which is already being brought back.
Well, it's being transmitted to us.
By the sun itself.
By the sun itself.
And the Earth intercepts about 1/2 billionth part of it. But from asteroids and from the moon, the right to bring back material is fully established. Therefore, why rock the boat? Simply do business in a way that is understood and will work.
Well, the issue of property rights never seems to, to lose.
People that just want to argue.
No, I don't really believe that, Charles. I think they really believe that you have to have the. Let's use the American model of private property ownership rights in order to make a business investment or to develop something.
Yeah.
And that is truly, their belief system.
Okay.
Whereas the Outer Space Treaty allows you to work the land and benefit from its productivity as long as you can have a continued presence working the land. I once wrote a paper on this property rights issue, and I said this is much the same as taking an oil and gas mineral lease from a Native American Indian reservation. Let's just, for example, say the Osage Indians in Oklahoma, because I'm familiar with them, or the federal government, a federal lease land. So you pay a royalty. Usually it's an eighth. Maybe now it's gone up a little, depending upon the value of what you think is under the ground there. And you pay for the development of it. All of that is yours. You have the liability.
Yeah,
all of that's yours. And as long as you have a presence there and work the land, the lease stays in your behalf.
Yeah, but Dave, this presumes someone owns the land or the heavenly body, and no one does. A better example is a mining claim, or better still, taking fish out of the ocean. You don't own the ocean, but you can own the fish you put
Well, yeah, on. Except my paper wasn't about the U.S. or the Osage Indians owning this. I said, okay, since these are international treaties that did this, let the UN or the group in The Hague issue the lease on celestial bodies.
There's a problem with that, and you will expose yourself to socialism and getting sucked in.
Hey,
it's
guess,
better to deal with the way things are now. NASA, without asking the UN's permission, and the Russians, have brought back regolith from the moon.
Well, you'll still end up in litigation.
No.
Because the spacefaring nations believe, this is an age-old argument.
Yeah.
The spacefaring nations sort of want to follow your model. There are more non-spacefaring nations who say that we have to participate and whatever wealth you extract from a celestial body, hence the common heritage of mankind,
mutual benefit sharing. That's seizure of the means to extract and bring back.
Well, so they want
that has to be fought.
They want a piece of the revenue stream,
like a
royalty.
Is means they can go there and get their own, not seize someone else's means.
What will happen is if somebody can actually do one of these ventures someday, it will end up in a court that has some jurisdiction. And finally, the issue between your view and the view that I'm reciting here, which is not my personal view, will get litigated. But until someone actually goes there and actually starts taking the resources back and actually going clink, clink, clink with the cash register, there isn't going to be any litigation because nobody's being harmed.
But there's good precedent to rest on if you do nothing more than what NASA has already done.
What do you think's going to happen when pick a country that's not spacefaring, pick a third world country, I don't know, pick any of them, and they go to The Hague?
Well, they're trying to do that with that lost treaty, the Sea Treaty, but the U.S. hasn't signed up for it. So,
no, but nobody's mining anything from the deep sea.
The treaty
makes it so uneconomic to do it that, and, this is one of the big fears, is that they'll end up screwing space up like the Law of the Sea Treaty and the amendments have done for mining things out of the sea. And they don't want that to happen. In fact, there's a group that I'm a member of, although it's much more active than I am, which is sort of my track record with groups. But Declan O'Donnell, the attorney out of Denver, has been a guest on the show many times, and he has that group called United Societies in Space, USIS. And his sole purpose for forming USIS was to come up with a protocol of government that would usurp anybody from trying to do something like the Law of the Sea treaties and apply it to space.
Well, or just prohibit seizure of someone else's assets.
Well, he developed
means
a whole
hardware and means to bring back stuff.
Yeah, he's developed a whole society in space. I mean, obviously it doesn't go any place, and nobody has the capability to go do all of this, and the talk on mining and all of that is really, you know, the rhetoric flows, trust me on this.
No, but reasonably near term, let's say within the next 10 years or so, somebody might be able to bring back Lunar Regolith for sale retail, you know, by the gram or what have you. And the right to do that is established, and I would think the best strategy is to simply fight for maintenance and exercise of that right without trying to expand to ownership of land.
Well, if you become the attorney of record for the guys doing it, then you can advocate that case.
Yeah.
I don't know what'll happen.
Okay, well, I think the best thing is to rest on what's already been done.
By the way, I have two shows about this very topic, not on the property rights issue, but on the mining issue. Dr. John Lewis is coming up in the near future, who wrote the classic book when he was a professor at Arizona. He's now retired, called Mining the Sky. Everybody should know if they don't know his book and his work.
I know the issue.
And then when I was at the space settlement conference at NASA Ames, they had a whole sections and groups devoted to mining, and one of the guys from Canada was speaking, and he works for, is one of the top people on a mining company that employs hundreds of thousands of people, and he talked about the realities of mining in harsh environments, equipment, you know, all sorts of things, and then he applied it to space. So he's going to do that for us on the space show. It's one of the more fascinating talks I have heard, and I can't remember his name right now, but he is booked on the schedule, and it's either toward the end of December or early next year. But I'll be promoting the heck out of both that and John Lewis.
Okay, well, I think you've heard me on it, that we ought to do what is legally safest.
Okay, so Charles, do you have your thick skin on?
Reasonably, why?
Okay, well, make it thicker.
Somebody is going to come on with something? Okay.
No, they're not going to come on, but I've been on a lot of open line shows and in a lot of emails. People say, or they're talking about space development or space policy or, and they're saying, or you can do what Pooley advocates and just toss NASA aside and this, but it's done in a way where your ideas are trivialized. And so that's why I said get your thick armor on.
Well,
let me finish because I'm laying it out for you.
Yeah, okay.
So either your ideas are trivialized by people because, one, they don't agree. Two, they don't understand. Three, you're not doing a good job of somehow explaining it. Or four, they're just jerks and schmucks and they want to trivialize like people do in the new space community all the time.
Okay.
So let's assume that your idea has merit.
Yeah.
And so let's assume there is a huge communication gap here, and you're not getting your points over to people so that they may not jump on your bandwagon and ride you and say, yay, Charles Pooley, for coming up with the right path, but they would stop trivializing you.
Okay,
well, now you have the floor.
Let me respond. One is maybe it was a bad use of words, whether mine or yours, to say overthrow NASA. No, I mean operate outside of and independent of NASA. Then secondly, yes, I am not somehow selling and making my case to many people. However, whatever the percentage of people that get it and like the idea, it is with those that this will get done, not the people who don't like the idea or don't believe in it.
So let's clarify.
Yeah.
You're not advocating the demise or the destruction of NASA,
no,
are you?
No, that's impossible.
But even if it weren't impossible, that's not been, from what I've gathered, what you're advocating, correct?
No, I'm advocating try to operate as if NASA doesn't exist outside of NASA.
And that's not the same as wanting to bash or destroy NASA.
Correct. Absolutely.
So you're basically saying is that we in the private community can build space development separate from the way NASA does business.
Yes.
If we adhere to the following path.
Yes.
And the path is starting small and ramp up and using the PC computer model as the model.
And that's what I'm pushing. And don't forget, a lot of the so-called space tourism business are kind of wanting to do that outside NASA also.
I understand that. Now, so I'm just trying to get clarified because I've seen this starting to surface, and I think there's a disconnect with people over what you're saying and what they're hearing or what they're thinking you're saying.
I am not, for some reasons, getting the point across to very many people. The two YouTube videos have only been seen a few thousand times each, and I'm trying to find a way to do this. Now, here in Las Vegas, I think I've got some better chances. I have to figure out a way to reach a larger number of people, but what really matters is not the people who don't get it, but the few who do. In a presentation last year, I gave the notion of 1 in 10,000 is going to get the idea and like it well enough to want to join and become involved.
So is it a numbers game for you? Because 1 in 10,000 means you're not going to get a whole lot of people.
I don't need a whole lot of people. 4 or 5 is enough to do the NASA challenge and the NSAT.
Okay.
That's all it takes. And maybe not even 4 or 5. Maybe 3 people will be enough. The hardware, partly designed, is really quite simple.
So are you? How are you coming along now?
Well, I'm still in the moving process, and then when I find a partner, I will lease a place. I don't want to take the chance of leasing it out of my pocket now. Rent will be around $1,000 a month, and there are a lot of places, industrial places here in Vegas to choose from.
You have a question in email from George, who's in Los Angeles, and he says, I can't believe you left Mojave and your friends, the evil ones. How can you possibly stand it in Las Vegas without the protagonist of your life?
Very easily. I have for a long time been avoiding talking directly about them or to them or naming them by name and so on. It is just a bad experience to be left behind.
Now, are you still going to be able to get back there to do things with Paul Breed and other people, Mike Garvey, others, when they're doing things?
I don't know about Paul, but I have 3 clients for my freelance consulting, one of whom is in Van Nuys in L.A. And, in fact, Monday night I go back for a couple days there. I've been going back and forth, and then I have 2 clients here in Vegas.
Okay.
Both of whom, by the way, have fled California.
Will you email me your new Las Vegas contact information so I'll have it in the files?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
So anyway, I'm listening every chance I get.
All right. Well, listen, I appreciate it, and take care of yourself and enjoy. Enjoy Las Vegas. I really do like Las Vegas. I know it's economically in the dumps right now.
I'm here to make this happen. I'm not paying attention to the casinos or the glitz or all that. I'm here to make this happen, and I think I have a strong feeling this is going to happen here.
Have you been out to Bigelow Aerospace yet?
No, and I don't know if it's even a good idea for me to try to get hold of him because he's of an entirely different, divergent belief system, and I have a feeling that he won't be interested, but maybe I should contact him just for the hell of it.
Very nice gentleman.
I mean, he won't eat me or anything. The most drastic thing he will do is just dismiss.
No, he's not into cannibalism.
Well, I mean, he'll just dismiss me as being.
I can't tell you, but you know, he's looking for rides for his project. He's in a different world, so.
Rocket science is like religion, except we don't kill each other. But what I mean by that, seriously, is that people invest in a particular outlook or belief or plan, and don't want to divert to someone else's, me included.
Do you have any information on what the lame duckies are going to do with continuing resolution in space?
To me, it's largely irrelevant. Again, I'm trying to operate as if NASA doesn't exist. It does. I don't think NASA's going to continue the way it has for the last 10 years or so. There's going to be a current version of the vision for space exploration or whatever. And space station is not going to come down because of international partners. The shuttle is about done for, and that's it.
Okay, listen, right. I'm sure we'll talk before the end of the year, but...
I want to, and as soon as I have a major change of status, I would like to do another show with you.
Absolutely. Maybe we'll do a video show with you, and we'll put a Van de Graaff generator in the picture, and we'll because remember when my kids said that you were their favorite guest, and they saw your YouTube things, and you look like the mad scientist from a 1950s sci-fi movie.
I need to get haircuts more often.
I don't think so. I think you looked the part, and
yeah, but look, I'm trying to engage and hook people who buy this idea, this notion, and like it enough to want to get involved. And I only need but a few such people.
Yeah, no, I know, and you need to be serious. But you did do a Google Talk one time on this.
I know, and that was a production disaster. Unfortunately, there was some kind of a hassle with Google where they laid off a bunch of people, and most of their contractors who were packaging the Google Tech Talks. And it took 10 weeks to put mine together, and it was a disaster.
Well, have you ever thought about, and I don't know how you go about doing this because I've never done it.
I'm going to get help doing more videos.
Well, I was thinking about doing a TED Talk.
A what?
TED, T-E-D, you know, the online video lectures by the organization. Go Google TED, and they do innovative,
okay,
cutting edge scientist, engineering,
right,
humanitarian things.
Thank you for the tip. I'll
and actually, the Space Frontier Foundation has, and I don't know how it's done, has carried on TED Talks in their New York region, particular to the Space Frontier Foundation.
Yeah.
But you might look into that.
YouTubes. Or there's more YouTubes that are better produced than my little 2-minute one.
Well, my son works for a company in L.A., and he just left, or I would ask him, but he does professional YouTube videos for companies that, and they have their own YouTube channel, so they can do a longer video.
If I have somebody here with me when making a YouTube, you know, holding the camera, and
well, they come out and film it, and they light it, and they're very, very professional. Yeah. But there's got to be a market for it. You know, this is a commercial venture.
That's why I have a feeling I may not be able to engage a service, but I can find a friend to be with me in producing a video, and that will come out much better than that 2-minute one, which was me staring in a webcam all alone in my office.
Yeah, and if you do a YouTube channel and get yourself your own channel for YouTube, you can then have much longer videos up there rather than the 6 or 7 minutes that YouTube allows.
Yeah, you know what? I think 10-minute maximums are about right, because I would want to, like,
well, you
put
do
out a bunch of little concise packaged ideas. And I may even want to do a little series on impromptu rocket science, little educational type things.
You could talk about launching balloons to space.
No, I won't do that. No, I'll stick with very conservative, conventional physics, and I'll use the type of rockets that I have in mind as the example, and then talk about that and turn it into a kind of a mini education thing. And it makes sense then to make it in 10-minute chunks, rather than too much to absorb.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anything else, Charles?
That's it for now, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, Charles.
Bye.
Bye-bye. So the toll-free number is available if any of you out there have something to say. Remember, we're doing a formal open line show next Sunday, December 5th, so I don't want to steal the thunder from that one. But sure, call in 1-866-687-7223. Our friend Andrew in Tucson, Arizona, sent in the following email. Hey, Andrew, by the way, it is really, really too bad that Arizona got shafted in the game with Oregon. And all I can say is that any team that goes to Oregon and plays in the home stadium of Oregon and doesn't bring their own referees and officials with them is crazy, because that is the worst officiating of any college football team in the country. It is not legitimate, in my opinion. I have seen many, many teams robbed of inspiration and momentum and motivation because of really bad, if not outright crooked, officiating. And boy, there was a lot of it in the first half, at least, in the Oregon and Arizona game. Penalties that should not be called. Even the announcers were going after that. And, of course, I'm a strong Arizona fan. I went to the University of Arizona. And I've seen that happen with UCLA in Oregon and Oklahoma in Oregon and other teams. And, you know, Arizona did really well, just not good enough. There's probably a real reason why Oregon is number one. Hardly has anything to do with football, with space, but I'm a big sports nut. Anyway, here's Andrew's space note. And those of you who are in Oregon, and if you think I have offended you, too bad. Too bad. When you did it to the University of Oklahoma, the officials were suspended. And on top of that, the president of the damn University of Oregon had to write an apology to the Big 12 Conference and the Pac-10 for that crummy officiating. So this is a long track record standing problem. You all ought to clean your act up there. Now, if you get mad at me, go get mad at me. Okay, I don't care. But things were supposed to be fair and not lopsided like what happens up there on the home football field. Okay, Andrew, anyone interested in a down-to-earth analog for how space might be litigated with respect to... the phone keeps ringing. I can't believe it. Okay, with respect to colonial enterprises, might want to look at the Spitsbergen Treaty. The Spitsbergen Treaty deals with resource utilization of the Svalbard archipelago in the extreme north of the Arctic Sea with regards to Norway's claim of ownership of the real estate versus other nations' ability to use the resources of the region. So I will put these terms into the write-up of this Open Line show so anybody can follow it up per Andrew's suggestion if they want to, because the my pronunciation is probably not very good for tracking it down phonetically. And Andrew, thank you. And by the way, your cell phone worked really well the last couple of times you called, so don't hesitate to call. I know you claim you have a cell phone issue, but it was pretty good the last couple of times you called. Okay, we do have another caller with us. And are you there, caller? Welcome.
This is John, Atlanta.
Of course. What's happening in Atlanta? What did I just see in Atlanta?
Not sure.
I don't know. I saw something with Atlanta. I don't know. It was a sci-fi movie or something. Anyway, go for it.
Well, a few weeks back, or maybe a few months now, we had I sent you an email, and I addressed the topic of UFOs had come up on the show, and I'd sent a comment about what I thought might have been going on with the Air Force and the UFOs over the years, you know. And the other day, I happened to accidentally run across something in a book which is sort of about Herman Kahn, who was a RAND strategist and a futurist, founder of the Hudson Institution. The book itself is more of a cultural look back on the Cold War years and a lot of things that went on there. And I ran across something that kind of related directly to that subject. Because remember, my theory was that because we didn't have in the early, late 40s and throughout the early 50s, the kind of radar warning systems and satellites and stuff that we later constructed to control our airspace from any potential Soviet aircraft, that we were actually using ground observers and things like Project Blue Book to collect any reports against any violations and stuff, you know, from pilots or people on the ground or whatever. And when I ran across something I'd never heard of before, that during the 50s, during that exact era, there was a thing called the Ground Observer Corps, which was organized by the government and was fairly extensive, apparently, which recruited large numbers of civilians to basically watch the skies and report through a system which would be filtered by... I guess all the Air Force intelligence to see if anything flying around wasn't ours or wasn't a civilian aircraft.
And what did they find? They find that we're being visited?
No, I mean, the focus was there a Soviet aircraft, spy plane, or whatever, intruding into our airspace? Because they didn't have all the radars that they later constructed, and there was gaps in those systems. What they generally found was just commercial aircraft were flying around, or misidentification. And the book also mentions the fact that when the U-2s first started their test flights and stuff, the Blue Book got a large number of UFO reportings that were due to the U-2 test flights, and that of course they couldn't admit what they were because it was a classified aircraft. And so I'm just trying to suggest that I thought that was further evidence of the fact that during that period of time, from the late 40s through the 50s, the mid to late 50s, they really were using civilian reports as part of our, let's say, surveillance of the skies. And my theory was that then after we did construct all the electronic systems, by the 60s it was totally redundant and useless. You know, they didn't need it anymore, and it started perpetuating the belief that among the populace that the Air Force really believed or knew something about aliens here. And that's why they eventually did the Condon Report and declared it to be not a problem for national security and shut the whole thing down, because it was like the last 10 years was kind of like something that, you know, those bureaucracies have kind of outlived their original purpose, but they keep on spending money.
Well, you know, my take on, and I don't do UFO shows and I'm not about to, my take is that there is a percentage of them that are not explainable by anything that we know, and there are some very credible stories and reports with hard evidence meaning the original tape recordings of the participants in the event, stuff like that, like
right.
The Bentwaters event in the forest in England, Leslie Keene's incredible work with the French Comita report that came out several years ago, and some others. Blue Book is highly controversial, and you know, how much of it is disinformation and how much of it is what you're talking about, I don't know. I'm not qualified to really, talk about it or even to know about it.
Right.
And I can tell you, do I even want to do this? I have had, I'm close to 1,500 space show programs, and let's see, I've had three or four astrophysicists and people working for NASA who have been a guest on the show. So for those of you who've never been a guest on the show, I offer the guest an opportunity to avoid talking about a topic that they don't want to talk about. So before the show starts or in emails, I will say something like, let me know if there's anything you want to avoid, and I'll keep it off the show. Because I know that a lot of these people who come on the show have security classifications, and a big reason why many more don't come on the show is because of the problem of a live radio show with live callers going off in a direction where they have to say something like, if I told you that, I'd have to kill you, you know, where they try to joke through it, or they say, I'm sorry, I don't know anything about that, or whatever. And they're not really skilled at it on radio, because they're not professional, you know, talent. And so they want to avoid the situation. So I give them a chance to give me some broad general brushstrokes on what we should avoid. So, for example, Dr. So-and-so may come on the show, and he's doing work on advanced propulsion, and legitimate work on advanced propulsion. And I'll say, is there anything that you want to avoid on this topic? And there'll usually be a pause. And I'm making this up, listeners, to give you an extreme example. So don't say this is what's happening. What I'm telling you is a fabrication to serve a point. He'll say, I don't want anybody asking me questions about back engineering the Roswell flying saucer at Area 51, okay? So there'll be a pause because, you know, I wouldn't have thought of asking him that anyway. And I'll say, okay, Professor Joe Blow, is just between you and me, is that because that crap is so preposterous that you don't want to demean your stature and your professionalism and your character by talking about it? Or is it because you have information about that and you want to make sure that you don't have any slip-ups on the space show? And there'll be a long pause, and he'll say, "I'd rather not say." And then my conversation would continue, and I'd say, "Jesus, you'd rather not say." That tells me that it's the latter, not you're worried about some preposterous crap bothering your position or stature or reputation. And he would then likely say something like, "Well, let's just leave it at that." So clearly I've been baited, and clearly, given my mind, I want to believe the latter rather than, you know, the former. And I've been left in the lurch thinking, what the heck did he really mean? And should I assume anything or not assume anything? So, okay, four times or five times in doing this show, when I have asked a guest, is there anything they should want to not talk about? And again, I don't do alien UFO shows. The closest we come to anything like that are the shows about SETI. And I've done a lot of shows about SETI. And I have had four or five people tell me that they cannot talk about anything related to these topics because of their position and what they know. And we have to leave it at that, David. So I don't know what to make of it. I could tell you who their names were and what their positions were, because I do remember each and every one who did that, but I'm not about to do it. And so
I wouldn't forget that.
I don't know what to make of it. I don't know if I'm being tweaked, because I don't make a secret of the fact that I love the topic. And, you know, I'm a big fan of Art Bell and Coast to Coast. And I go around with shirts with E.T. on them, and people who have seen me in person know my cell phone has an alien head on it. And, you know, I love the topic. I just won't touch it on the space show. So I don't know if I'm being tweaked, John, or kidded with, or played with, or fooled with, or screwed with. I have no idea. But maybe, you know, the guys are just sincere, and they say keep the damn topic off the air, which I keep off the air.
Well, all I'm saying is that, well, I mean, for one thing, some of these other things we've been discussing that really did exist did have some classification involved with them at the time, back in the 50s and stuff, you know. What I'm saying is that I'm saying that it seems to me the big thrust of this whole thing was getting civilians to report unidentified flying objects, meaning presumably foreign aircraft intruding into our airspace. And obviously sometimes it's weather balloons, sometimes it's the moon, the planet Venus, and sometimes maybe it's a spacecraft from Alpha Centauri. But the point I'm getting at is, I think the real thrust of the effort was that, and whatever else somebody scooped up, I mean, was probably an unexplained that they, you know, didn't want to mess with either, probably. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Unless they really did have crash debris remains, which I tend to doubt that. But I'm just saying that I think another thing is, in organizations with a lot of security, I'm sure there's somebody in the government that is interested in this subject, and they'd probably like to keep their interest.
Well, Jimmy Carter was interested in it.
If you're a bureaucrat in the defense intelligence establishment, and you're interested in the subject, and you want to go look into it, you probably want to classify it for the same reason you don't want anybody criticizing what you're doing.
I don't know,
so
but
I wouldn't be surprised if there is anything like that. It may well be classified, and he can't talk about it.
Well, all I can tell you is I do remember what my connection this past week was to Atlanta. Because when Chris Stott finished his space show interview, and we were lamenting on, you know, the absence of real policy and leadership in the country, not just about space, but in general. And I think Chris either wondered out loud or maybe I commented on it. and said, you know, like, where is all the good leadership and the policymakers? You know, why is it gone? Where is it? What's happening to our country? So as soon as the show ended, somebody sends me the YouTube clip of the story that broke a year ago with your esteemed member of Congress from Atlanta, one of your districts, I forget the gentleman's name, who in questioning a esteemed high-ranking naval admiral said that he was a little bit concerned that because Guam is so small, it might get so many people on it they could tip it upside down in the ocean. And
down in the 4th District, yeah. Yeah. What's his name? I forget, too. It's
well, you want to forget his name, I'm sure of that. But how the admiral sat there and took it without shaking his head and going into hysterics is beyond me. But even more so, the guy was just reelected in the district almost unanimously, and I think he probably holds the record for the dumbest whack job in Congress.
Well, remember, he's the guy that took Cynthia McKinney's place.
Well, yeah.
It's the same district.
And it's the same ilk. But I don't know. What happened when you guys heard that was coming out of Atlanta? I'm sure that was big news last year. You had to laugh at something like that, or are you just totally embarrassed and disgusted?
I'm sure some people were chuckling, but then again, like I say, it's the same district Cynthia McKinney come from. They tend to elect people that ilk, I guess.
Who think that they're going to tip over Guam because there's too many people on it. I love it.
I think he tried to explain later he was just sort of joking if there was something.
Oh, yeah, right.
Well, you know, I don't know. You know, he's, I don't much about him. He's kind of low-key compared to Cynthia. That's one of the few times he actually made a lot of press.
Well, we looked up to see what committees the guy was on, because I wanted to know if he was on any space committees. He really wasn't on any space committees, but he was the chairman of and the ranking member of a House subcommittee on a really important topic, and I don't remember what it was. Maybe a listener will correct me, or maybe you know. I mean, he won't be now because he's a Democrat and the Republicans are going to take over. But to think that the guy was actually the chairman of a subcommittee of anything other than maybe garbage collection is beyond. If you want to know what's wrong with Congress, the fact that people like this can get elected and crooks can get elected and stuff like that, man, I'll tell you, you know, we really got some problems in our nation. And how can you solve problems of STEM education and keep technology on the cutting edge and do incredible things in space and medicine and science and in other things when you got lawmakers like this? Now, I know he's probably more of an aberration than a common, but wow. I laugh at it. I get as many chuckles as the next guy does. But overall, for the welfare and benefit of moving forward and for our nation, these people should be, told to go back to school. Remember that book, Everything I Needed to Learn, I Learned in Kindergarten?
Yeah.
Well, this guy never got beyond kindergarten, and I don't think he learned very much.
Well, I don't know. It's one of these things, you know, they kind of have the district sort of gerrymandered in a way so that, you know, each side gets their share.
Yeah,
whatever.
Can you think about how they gerrymander Guam? Maybe, you know, they put the Republicans on the side that when it tips over, they'll go in the water first, or yeah, vice versa. I don't know. His name Jackson? Is that his name?
Something like that. I guess I could figure it out. Also, you were discussing earlier, I guess, the thing about the Congress and the budget and all that.
Yeah, I want to know if anyone has any good insider information on what's going to happen.
Well, I suspect in the limited time, I don't think you're going to see an actual appropriation bill come out of it. You know, I mean, I think it's going to be a continuing resolution because, you know, there's so little time and so many issues that are being battled that, you know, I don't think anybody's come to any real resolution on any of these things, you know. And probably the Republicans, at least on the Senate side, probably really don't want it to because they want to have more influence by putting it off to January where they can they can actually have more influence, if you will, you know. I mean, they can filibuster, see what I'm saying? So, you know, essentially, they won't get cloture and, you know. So I'll probably end up doing a continuing resolution the next year. That'd be my personal guess. Just I'm a follower of politics, and that's what I would see likely.
Okay.
On the So the tax is another interesting issue. Does anything happen on that? I think that's more, you know, up in the air.
No, I think it's still up in the air, and I've heard a lot of, you know, again, this doesn't have a lot to do with space, but I've heard a lot of people saying, you know, God, we can't go into the new year with this unknown uncertainty ready to explode on January 1st, that there has to be a resolution to it, and they're not sure the lame ducks will come up with a resolution.
Well, one thing about that is that, I think it's already too late to stop the withholdings, because those instructions have already gone out from the IRS on how to increase the tax withholdings after the first of the year. They had to do that a few weeks ago. So I think what's going to, you could still make it retroactive if it's passed in January, you know what I mean? Because, and I think the actual taxes being withheld going up will probably put a lot of political pressure on everybody to get something done, if that actually occurs. You know what I'm saying? There are going to be people that haven't been paying any income taxes at all that are going to actually be having to pay income taxes now.
I know, but they don't realize that.
Well, they're going to realize it in January when they see their check go down, and that's what I'm trying to say, that if it actually does expire, there's going to be a little bit of a hullabaloo next January, I think.
Well,
and it can be made retroactive the first of the year as far as the actual what's owed on the 1040, if you will.
Well, we'll see. You know, we'll see what happens. I hope they come up with some kind of a situation. But you're right. They've probably already started the computer programming instructions to do this. So
I think that's all been put out. So the other thing on that, though, is the general consensus seems to be that while both sides are sort of jockeying, and one saying, no way, at $250,000, you know, and up has to have their taxes come up, and the other side is saying, you know, it's got to be everybody, that the compromise will be to extend it for everybody for a finite period of time, like 2 years or maybe three, so that it sort of kicks it out of the immediate political problem, but it gives whoever wins the next presidential election freedom to do it their way after that point.
Well, I keep hearing that Pelosi doesn't want to bring it up on the floor of the House, so that negates doing it in the lame duck.
And I think that's fully a viable thing could happen, because, like I say, that it's probably the withholdings are probably going to happen anyhow. And as I say, after the first of the year, the Congress comes back right after the first, the third, or fourth, very early in the year, and gets sworn in. And they could get to work on it right then, you know. So
yeah, right. Our Congress.
Well, I mean, you have a new Congress. I mean, you're going to have the Republicans are going to control the House. Every bill that hasn't actually gone through the Senate and been reconciled and gone to the President becomes void that they've passed, you know. And so everything's got to start from new, and they may very well come right in and pass it right through the House. Now, what the Senate does with it's a whole different game.
Well.
You know?
We wait and see. How do you let's bring it the discussion into space?
Uh-huh.
Let's assume the Bush tax cuts expire, mm-hmm. and that they do not have a resolution, and we're all being taxed at the higher rates.
Yeah.
How do you see that impacting space, or do you see it impacting space?
I don't see that in itself. I mean, you could say there's more revenue in the short term. I don't see that would have any real impact on the space.
What about the entrepreneurial space community?
Well, I mean, the tax rates will be lower, so that would be more favorable to.
No, I'm saying the Bush tax rates expire, so the tax rates
expire and the rates go up.
The rates go up when they expire.
Well, then that would be negative for any entrepreneurial activity marginally because of the extra taxation. But yeah. I mean, I think it would be, I don't know how big of a factor it would be there, you know, I mean.
Well, it won't be a factor on their policy making for sure.
Right. I think I think the real issue there is more like what does the spending cut agenda that's coming in with the new House do to the space budget and to the commercial space? Because you got that debt commission that's already recommended basically zeroing out commercial space as part of the NASA budget.
Yeah, and Alan Simpson said that we seniors, I guess I can include myself in it since I'm 64.5 years old now, and I'll be on Medicare in June, like it or not, are the greediest segment of the population ever in the history of America. He said we have the greatest generation, which fought World War II, and now we have the greediest, which are the seniors, based on his recommendation that you know, senior medical treatment, stuff like that, be cut and deferred and rationed and all of that, and the amount of hate mail he has gotten on the issue from people being impacted by that. And again, that would be people 65 and older, so the senior community. So, yeah, I mean, they zero out commercial space, but clearly the what it may impact on seniors, it's a much bigger part of the population, certainly more vocal part. So that would have a lot more impact on what Congress does than what I think space policy would be.
Yeah, the Social Security changes that are in there that I recall are really so far out in the future that it would be like, you know, it'd be almost like 20-somethings.
But not the Medicare, yeah. Not the Medicare issues.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing they need to that the lame duck has to address is a so-called doc fix, because there's been some kind of cut in Medicare that's been basically, you know, put off temporarily every year, year after year for a long time, just like the alternate minimum tax has been pushed forward every year, you know, like that manually. You know, each year they pass a resolution or law and push it forward one more year before it has to take effect. And if that happens, they say that'll be devastating to a lot of hospitals if they cut the payments down that.
Well, that and the doctors are being cut and people. There's a Washington Post article on it, I think, on Friday that said, you know, if you're needing kidney medical treatment, you're going to have 8 and 9 month wait periods, or was it 8 or 9 week wait periods to even be to get seen, even if you're having a crisis type of problem. And it just went sort of down the laundry list about how hard it is to get a Medicare doctor and on and on and on and on. So yeah, you would think the lame ducks would deal with some of this and to try to cushion some of the blows, but that debt panel that Simpson is on, the one that said let's zero out commercial space funding, is it also recommended significant changes and reductions in Medicare. And what Simpson was saying is that the seniors are the greediest group, because they don't want any, you know, of their entitlements taken away, take everybody else's away. And if you look at who can influence Congress, the senior citizen community is magnitudes more in proportion than the space community, right? And I'm sure the senior benefits are multiple times the value of whatever commercial space assistance is rendered by the federal government. I think you could zero out commercial space and you wouldn't even see it show up on a federal government financial statement.
Right, it's very small. They recommend a bunch of other things. They recommended the cancellation of the F-35, the Marine version of the F-35 as well. There's a bunch of stuff in there. I don't think they're going to do things. I think Nancy Pelosi is definitely for extending doing the so-called doc fix. I can't believe she wants to cut Medicare. I mean, that's the kind of thing she'd support, you know?
I don't know. She signed the health care bill. Anyway, I don't want to do politics.
But as far as it affects space, but I'm just saying, I think that was just a work around the budget thing. They wanted to say it didn't cost more than so much money, and so they didn't put that in it. They were going to do it separately. And then, you know, every time they do one of these things, they pass a resolution where it's literally that you have to waive all financial discipline or something like that before you can do that.
Well, here, let's tie it back to space, because okay. I don't want to do a political show. The deal is that there are cuts coming, and they're coming in entitlements, and they're coming in the discretionary part of the budget.
Right.
And if you look at the pressure groups that can bring pressure to bear on their member of Congress to support their entitlement or their wish list,
right,
senior citizens, for example, the AARP, and other groups are magnitudes more powerful and influential than everybody in the space cadet world put together.
Right.
So we come up on the short end of the stick.
Right. I mean, as I say, space is probably going to get a cut. I still think that space, they're going to probably just talk about across-the-board percentage cuts in certain classes of discretionary spending. And I think space gets its percentage hit just like everybody else gets theirs, you know. And I don't think it's going to be a targeted let's get space movement, but I think it does get a hit that's going to hurt, you know what I mean? That's my thinking, anyhow.
Real quickly, from John in Montana, And then I'm going to bury the political part of the show because I don't want to do it. Yeah. The Medicare cuts were accumulated with temporary extensions off the current situation. The implication is more than 30% cut in reimbursements for physicians. Hospitals are not significantly affected by these extensions and are allowed to expire. So let's just leave it alone, other than to say that depending on how they cut, the lobby and pressure groups for entitlements are so significantly more influential and powerful in Congress than space that it's hard to see how space, you know, stands its ground. And what we have to stand our ground with is the merit of the argument, because space really is fundamentally key to moving forward and keeping America advanced. I don't think anyone listening to this show would doubt that, whether they're new space, whether they're old space, whether they're traditional aerospace, NASA, whatever. And, you know, because we don't have the numbers and the lobbying power and the pressure and the influence that can be brought to bear, then what you end up is that other groups that are really huge. When I gave my talk at North Dakota, I actually had a slide on how many members AARP has and what their budget is a year for lobbying, and then the same for the National Rifle Association and a couple of others of these groups. And then you look at what the space community is, and you can start to see why Congress, you know, votes and does things and goes for earmarks, and space is kind of the poor boy. And I think you're right. I think it'll be cut, and whether it's a cut across the board or more targeted, I can't tell you.
Look, the trade-off is only going to have to be, I think, pretty much between commercial space and heavy lift. I mean, it seems to me likely. I mean,
or they may cut them both.
I think if we look at a percentage cut, I mean, I don't know what percentage we're talking about, but I wouldn't think, you know, what we're looking at, maybe.
Well, so
15% maybe.
All right, so here's how I understand it works, and maybe you can tell me differently or a listener can tell me differently.
Yeah.
Congress says, okay, instead of $19 billion going to NASA, we're going to cut, let's use 10%, it's easier for math, we're going to cut $1.9 billion out of that, okay,
right.
Or $2 billion. So NASA's going to get $17 billion buckaroos.
Right.
So now the NASA administrator is going to have to decide how to spend that money. So it's the administrator and the administrative's office that decides what NASA programs, you know, get how much. So where does Bolden take the hits, and where does he keep the funding somewhat stable? I don't think Congress is going to say, we're going to cut you 10%, and by the way, you can't use any of the money for heavy lift, or you can't use any of the money for this, that, or the other. They're going to allow the micromanaging to be carried out by NASA.
And that's certainly possible, yes. I mean, that's one scenario. If it's done just as a across-the-board cut, yeah, it would probably be like that. On
now,
the other hand, if they actually passed an actual...
That cut a program.
Cut it that much. They might. It might be the committees that would make that call, and you know, I mean, it depends on how they handle it.
Well, so are we better off letting NASA micromanage, or the committee saying we want you to terminate heavy lift, we want you to terminate commercial space, and not let the administrator make the choices?
Yeah.
What are we better off with?
Depends on whether you're working for a heavy lift vehicle plant or whether you're working for commercial space. If I was with SpaceX, I'd probably rather have the NASA administrator do it, since he's been pretty much favorable to commercial. But if I was there with the heavy lift project, I probably would prefer to have the Congress do it.
But, so
you know, I think that's probably the truth there. Is, you know, if it came down to it, I think, you know, the support for commercial is probably stronger with the NASA right now than it is with you know, at the high level of NASA, it is with Congress.
Okay.
They don't have the money yet, anyhow, right? I mean,
well, that's true. We don't know what they're going to do.
I'm saying is right now those big projects have funding. It's currently under Constellation.
Well, they have authorization. Yeah, Constellation.
But a lot of that heavy lift is just Constellation getting restructured essentially to do a different rocket, but it's essentially the same kind of people doing, you know. You're probably going to have some SRBs, and you're probably going to have, you know, a core stage, and you know what I mean? It's sort of like Ares five light or something is what it really is, and kill Ares One. It sounds like what they're talking, you know.
Well, do you think the lame ducks are going to do it, or do you think the new Congress is going
to
do it?
I think new Congress. I don't think there's time for them to do it in the lame duck, and I think they got so many other things on their agenda. So I think they do a continuing resolution that puts them in the next year, and then the new Congress looks at it.
And they leave it to the new Congress to do the dirty job of budget cutting.
I think so. That's my opinion. Of course, we'll see. The next 3 weeks, we'll have a more better read on it, right?
All right. Well, listen, the best advice I can give you is if Atlanta has a high ground, stay on that, because when Atlanta flips over, then you'll be on the higher ground and you'll stand a better chance of being rescued
by the Navy. It's Hank Johnson's the guy's name.
Hank Johnson, thank you.
Okay.
Hey, Hank, if you want to come on the space show and defend yourself about Guam and see if you're smarter than a fifth grader, I'll put you on the space show anytime. Just, you know, let me know. Go through John here, and he knows how to contact me.
Yeah.
And we'll do a great space show program, and you'll be given absolute utmost total respect and treatment, just like the Navy Admiral gave you, I promise. And we'll have a lot of fun to boot.
Okay,
thank you very much.
Okay, bye.
Wow, a couple of calls, and we've used up all our time for this show, although we did start late, hoping to find our guest today, which unfortunately we could not find. And again, there is a real open line show scheduled for next Sunday. Maybe Chris can come on next Sunday. We'll see, and I'll change that. Wow, I can't believe the phone again. Where are you guys when we're doing regular shows? Space Show, can I help you? Is this Congressman Hank Johnson?
No, I'm afraid not. It's Tim again.
are you tipping over?
No, give me a second. Okay. Well, my chair is now tipping over. well, leaning back anyway. How's that? Is that good enough for you?
No, I got to keep to the high ground here, Tim. What is on your mind again?
You were mentioning that debt panel wanting to cut all the commercial spending done by NASA.
Well, they wanted to cut. They said that they should cut. I don't have the exact wording. The program for NASA to fund the commercial space companies, and I don't have the exact wording of what they recommended.
Well, I got two things to say. Well, first off, I don't know what the Debt Commission expects us to do with the ISS if we don't have either the commercial or the Ares or a government funded one, a funded space manned space program. I guess they expect us to continue using the Soviets.
I don't know.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to comment was, I believe it was a week or two ago when I think his name is Wayne Hale.
He wrote some blog articles. Yeah.
Yeah, he wrote one about commercial space taking money from NASA being a deal with the devil. I think he would probably like this idea for the debt panel to cut all the commercial money from NASA's budget.
I don't know. He wrote a follow up to that article and sort of backtracked a little bit. And wasn't intending to demean NASA. Listeners, if you go to that open line show, I think it's around the 11th of this month, both of the URLs to Wayne's blog are listed there, and you can find the articles that we're talking about. I don't know. I don't know if he would want to see the commercial funding cut. I mean, the problem with all of this is that shuttle's going to retire. You know, they're not going to keep it flying. You know, how are we going to get, as you said, to the ISS? So the only thing left is to, you know, use the Ruskies and then develop our own capabilities. So either the government's going to develop the capability like they were doing with Constellation or some variation of that, or they're going to pay the private sector to go out and do it on a commercial basis. Or we say, okay, we don't need to go to the ISS, and we'll just do it with the Ruskies for as long as we can. I don't know.
I think Wayne Hale's idea is to keep all the funding out of keep all the NASA funding out of the commercial space, so that way the bureaucracy of NASA doesn't have an influence over it, and eventually forced the United States to just buy seats from the commercial space people rather than dictate to them what they could do with their spacecraft. I mean, if you look at it like this, I don't think they say anything about the Russians. They don't say, okay, this, all right, your Soyuz has to fit this 200-page report right here. If it fits everything on here, we will let you fly. I don't think they do that.
No, but they work closely with the Russians, and the Russians have a very significant and very important and successful track record of carrying humans to and from space and the space station. And, yeah, they've had accidents, so have we. But I think there's a difference in the character and quality and tone of that partnership than with untried, unproven companies and their product line. And maybe someday they absolutely would get to the same position. But you know what? I have no clue what the bureaucratic standards are for human spaceflight safety with a Soyuz. I don't know whether it's 250 pages of this is what we have to do and comply and work with NASA and the space station, or whether it's 2 pages.
I know that the Gemini, according to that blog, the Gemini only had like 24 pages.
Well, but look at the space shuttle and the space station relative to Gemini. I mean, we're talking magnitudes of of differences in technology, crew size, length of duration in space, capability, mission, the world's a lot different in 2011 than it was in the late 60s and 70s.
Yeah. Well, we have a far more stringent bureaucracy,
and we're
more risk averse.
Yeah, we're more risk averse. But you know, again, you could follow the Debt Commission's recommendation. You could zero out all the money being planned over the next 5 years for commercial space, and I seriously doubt it would show up on any government financial statement.
Yeah, it's sort of...
It's trivial.
Yeah, it's trivial. Well, the word I was actually going to use, it's symbolic. It's a horse and pony show. Is that the correct terminology?
Yeah, dog and pony show.
Dog and pony show. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
No, listen, it is. Now, if they told us they were going to zero out Medicare payments, you know, because the class of people affected are so huge, and they were going to, what, they couldn't zero them out because Medicare is a fact of law. But let's say they're going to reduce them over the next 5 years by 35%. I'm picking a number at random. That would not be insignificant.
Now, one thing they could do that would be significant but wouldn't hurt too much would be just either a spending increase or across the board percentage cut. Like 1 or 2%
spending freeze with this Congress. Come on, this Congress and my lovely state of California. Not only do they not understand what a spending freeze is, they only understand the other direction.
Well,
you know, I've told the story. I go to the California Space Day, Let's Lobby in Sacramento this year, back in May, and I told the story when I did a show about it, and we sat in with. It was the last legislator of the day, and it was their staffer, and it was a Democrat, but that doesn't mean anything because the Republicans were just as bad. And something came up about California having an anti-business nature, and the staffer, God, she was just so off in another planet. She should have been a space cadet, but she wasn't. And she says, you know, that's just a myth that California isn't hostile to business. We love business here. So everybody on our panel, you know, gasped for air and couldn't believe it. And we start telling her why California is hostile to business. And people with large aerospace companies who were on our panel were telling us about how they won't do any more projects in California, and on and on and on and on. And then The staffer turns around and is looking at me because I'm the sole conservative on our panel. Everybody else was Democratic or more liberal than me, being on the panel. And she turns around and she's looking at me and she says, you know, California, we really have to find more sources of revenue. That's our key. We have to find more sources of revenue without making the taxes so burdensome on everybody. So this is when everybody turns to me and says, David, you want to answer that? I mean, we were all on the same page. We couldn't believe this. And I said, you know, California doesn't have a revenue problem. It has a spending problem. You guys need to quit spending our money. You need spending cuts and spending freezes across the board. And she says, but how can we take care of everybody? And I'm putting emphasis in my speech pattern because that's what she was doing. How can we take care of everybody? We get so many letters from people. They need us to take care of them. And that's because probably close to 45-40% of Californians don't pay any income taxes, and they do take from the state. And, you know, they never met a revenue source that they didn't like. So we have a revenue problem in California, not a spending problem. And I think the federal government is the same thing, except the federal government has the power of the printing press, and California doesn't.
Yeah. Someone should have told that lady the best way the government can help people is by creating a business climate where they can get jobs.
But she believes this is the disconnect. And until you do this face-to-face with these buffoons, you really don't understand how deep the disconnect is. She really believes what she is telling us. She's not shining us on. She really and truly believes that. She doesn't believe that their policies are not creating jobs and wealth. And she doesn't believe that people are leaving the state. You know, I go to Thanksgiving dinner, and I'm with some very, very intelligent, well-informed people. And we ended up talking about the California situation. And I said, you know, the businesses and the people with assets are leaving California in record numbers for other states that are more business-friendly and tax-friendly environments, because California is not one. And they go, where do you hear that? We never hear that. We never read anything like that. That's not happening in this state. We're totally business-friendly in this state. Look at all the new businesses that get created here. And the disconnect is so huge. And it's not that people are lying or trying to shine you on. It's that they really believe in the disconnections. You know, so I've come to the decision, to the conclusion that we're pretty much hopeless because we're so partisanly divided and so divided on the factual basis of what happens. The fact can be anything that is subjective nowadays, and that used to not be the case. My experience tells me that the disconnects on these kinds of issues are so severe and growing more and more severe on a daily basis. There is no rapprochement of coming together for anything. I just can't. I don't see a sign of it any place. I really don't.
I understand where you're getting at, and I do agree with you. I mean, especially this last Congress, our current Congress right now is like that, especially. But here's the thing. You know, in 2010, I mean, we might have a little bit of relief with these new Congress, with these new people coming into Congress. You got the Republicans, they're having second thoughts about going along with the Democrats and with continuously spending up all the money. Plus, you have a lot of state legislatures that went from Democrat to Republican, and it's about time to redraw the district. So I think we're going to be living some interesting times,
well,
especially for the Democrats.
That's true. And you know, if anybody thinks that the world is going to change one way or the other because of the changes in this election, I think, you know, share your dope with me and let me smoke something and feel good, too. I don't think it's going to happen. I think whatever changes happen are probably going to end up being on the margins. and you know, we'll have just as stupid of policies as we had before. They'll just be different policies. I think the education and the other problems we talk about on this show are so bad in this country, and the divisions and all of this, and even to have a debate around real facts and uncertainty, and this policy gores this person's ox, and this policy, you know, goes after this person's ox. It's kind of like, I don't agree with Alan Simpson, but kind of like what he said and what his hate mail is about. And space is just, you know, it's not on the horizon except in our community.
I'm a little bit more optimistic than you, but it only if people continuously keep in contact with the congressman, like you said. You want to talk to these all right, I know you said it more like you need to know how – you need to talk to these people to know how disconnected they are from reality. But I think they can be intimidated to a certain extent that we can get them to say, hey, you know, I don't really care about these issues, but I do want to get reelected. So if I keep on spending, you know, like crazy, I'm going to pay for it come November in 2 years from now. You got to keep on these people constantly. You know, send letters, let them know. They don't read every one letter, but they know the pattern of letters or phone calls that just keep cropping up. They take notice of that because they do want to stay. They do want to keep their job.
Well, we'll leave it at that. I don't think that we have the ability to intimidate these bastards, and excuse my French there, but...
No, it's okay. I speak words. I say words, but it doesn't bother me.
But this is internet radio. I can probably, you know, say that. In fact, there's a great movie. If I wanted to do movie reviews, and I could review the movie Inglourious Basterds from last year, and that has a word in it. For those of you who haven't seen it,
Death Comedy Jam, if you want. I wouldn't advise it, but you could technically.
But go see, go rent it. It won't be in the theaters anymore. If you never saw it, it's really a terrific movie. Okay, Tim, thank you very much for your
call.
You're
welcome.
Okay, bye-bye. We got another email from John in Atlanta. Let's see. He's going to dinner tonight with Hank Johnson. He'll be sure to give him space show regards. No, I'm kidding you people. He's not going to dinner with him. But maybe he'll go swimming in Guam with him, okay, after the island tips over. And that Navy admiral can have a rescue ship right there to pick up all the survivors as the island capsizes. Okay, here's what John really and truly has to say. God, I shouldn't really put down Mr. Johnson. He is a member of the U.S. Congress and it does deserve our respect for getting elected. What would likely happen is Orion launched with a Delta IV Heavy sometime in the 2015 timeframe. After shuttle, we will be dependent on the Russians. I believe the Deck Commission just recommended canceling commercial crew, not cargo. And I think you're right on that, John. Thank you for that clarification. We're coming up, I can't believe, almost a two-hour show, notwithstanding the fact that we started late because we were still looking for our guest today. If anybody out there still wants to call us, the toll-free number is 1-866-687-7223. Let me go over some of the future space show programs with you because we have an action-packed December. I'm not kidding you. Hold on a minute. This is probably one of the better Decembers that we've ever been able to book on the space show, starting tomorrow. Okay, so here we go. The end of November. All right. So November 29th tomorrow, the Reverend James Heiser is with us, and he is on the board of the Mars Society. And he's very outspoken gentleman, and he is very active in the—I think he's Lutheran, if I'm not mistaken. And he has a new book on settling the space frontier and relative issues. I think you'll really enjoy hearing Reverend James Heiser tomorrow. And those of you who go to Mars Society meetings, you've heard the Reverend speak many, many times. Many of you have probably met him. You absolutely know what a charismatic and dynamite person Reverend Heiser is, so I'm really glad that James is going to be on the show. Thanks to a listener suggestion, Dr. J. Richard Gott from Princeton University is on the show Tuesday night. At least that's the plan. And he is known for a lot of things, but the Copernicus solution or theory is what we're going to be talking about, among other things. If you don't know what I'm talking about, Google him, J, the initial J, Richard Gott, G-O-T-T. Constance Adams is with us on Friday. Constance is a real space architect, NASA contractor, and does real work on trying to develop closed-loop architectural space systems for human spaceflight. So those of you that like to pontificate on where we are with closed-loop life support, you're going to hear it from the source. Okay, other programs coming up. Open Lines next Sunday. Filmmaker Francis French is with us. Dan Walt is with us on Pearl Harbor Day, December 7th. He is an expert and works in government procurement. It took him a while to get permission to come on the show, but we're going to talk about the actual process of what's involved in procurement. We've heard it talked about on a lot of programs and how bad it is or how good it is or whatever. We're going to hear it for the real on Tuesday, December 7th. Let's see. Rex Ridenour, Ecliptic Enterprises, is due December 10th. Sean Casey is going to update us on Sophia and other topics. John Goff will be with us. Remember, John was with, Maston Space Science Space Systems. He's formed his own company, and he's going to tell us about what he's doing now, so we're looking forward to John coming back on the show. Carrie Scarlett is on the ITAR Reform Committee with the government, and he is with us on December 14th. Brian Whedon of Secure World Foundation is with us again, and he's been doing some real interesting work, and you'll want to hear about that. Dr. Stan Rosen is with us, and he has very innovative ideas for developing space with real tangible benefits for various segments of the economy and more. Dr. Al Kohler has a company called Space Tech. You all have heard me rant and go crazy about the space workforce issues and training technical jobs and all of this. He does it, and he'll talk about space education. Bob Richards is with us about his new space ventures, having left Odyssey Moon. Zimmerman is with us. You all know what to expect with that one. Open Lines, December 26th. David Hook, our aviation security mastermind, is with us. And, you know, the lovely TSA is now setting out rules for general aviation at private airports. So we're going to go over that and more. Clark Lindsay, who does Hobby Space and RLV News and all of that great, great resource for the community, is with us. He wants to do a new space wrap-up December 28th. Tom Olson comes back on Friday morning, December 31st, and he's doing his annual summary of what happened in the space year. So that'll be Tom Olson, the full space community wrap-up. And boy, this, you know, 2010 has been a tumultuous year, hasn't it? We're already booking into 2011, but we can do that at a later point in time. I just let you know what's going on the agenda through December. So it doesn't appear to have any more callers. So we'll log off for this open line show, and we'll do our best to reschedule Dr. Chris McKay as soon as possible. You know, if it may not be into next year, but we'll see what we can work out. And I apologize for the change in the programming at the last minute, but I'm glad we had some callers that were of interest to this show and to all of you. We're moving into the holiday season, and so I urge everybody to have a keen sense of awareness when you're out partying and driving. Be safe and keep your family safe, and make sure you're around not only for the entire holiday season, but as we move into what is probably going to be a very exciting and very different year for 2011. So thank you all for listening to this Open Lines last-minute sort of space show program. I appreciate your participation. And back tomorrow with Reverend James Heiser. You'll see the name of his book and all of the details on our newsletters when they come out tomorrow morning and later today on the website newsletter. Thank you all. Goodbye from the Space Show.